food at this point has become such a liberating, healing tool for me, where I ask myself, like, how do I want to feel today? And how do I promote that via food? And how do I reach for something that's going to nourish me versus deplete me or give me brain fog the next day? And
hey, I'm Jackie Kirshen, obsessed with all things sustainable weight loss, mindful eating, transforming minds, and empowering you. I'm a registered dietitian and mom who's lost 65 pounds and grew a successful coaching business helping other women do the same. Join me to learn tried and true weight loss secrets while healing your relationship with food and your body. You'll get unfiltered real talk, support, and some tough Jackie love as we dive into motherhood, mindset shift, entrepreneurship, and mastering this crazy thing called life. Think of this as your one-stop shop for a coffee date with your best friend, guide, and mentor mixed with weight loss coaching. Tune in to be challenged, encouraged, and laugh as we change lives together. Welcome to the Mindful Nutritionist Show. Hey guys, happy Monday and welcome back to the Mindful Nutritionist Show. It's your host Jackie and I wanted to check in to see how are you doing. I know you're probably like, Jackie, why do you always start out with asking how we're doing? But that is so important that you are checking in with yourself. If you haven't heard any of my other episodes and what I do in my coaching, we always start out with our wins. So I want to make sure that you are sending me a DM on Instagram and telling me how are you doing, that you're listening to this episode, what is going on. And the reason why I'm so freaking thrilled about this episode is because Scout is not only my childhood friend, I've literally known her since I was five. So if you're watching this on video, you will see the picture that I bring when we were 5 years old. But also, she is a thought leader when it comes to mental health and mindset. And not only has she been through her own mental health journey, and of course is still working on it today, but she is an incredibly successful entrepreneur and podcaster. So I'm super thrilled to have her. Not only does she give you so many, again, different tips in order to support your own mental health, but she definitely coached me. So it was very interesting to watch someone else coach me on a podcast. So I'm just so excited for you to dive in. There was really a lot of intentional pieces that she said that not only relate to mental health, but your health journey as a whole. Remember, when it comes to health, it is mental, it is spiritual, it is emotional, and it is physical. So I'm so excited to dive in because she really talks about, again, first of all, the things that she does not have time for as a mom and how to prioritize the things that move the needle. So I am so excited because that is something that I talk about with my ladies inside Mindful Weight Loss Academy, focusing on the things that move the needle for you in your journey. So without further ado, let's hop on in. All right. And we have Scout. Scout, I am so excited to have you on the show. Welcome to the Mindful Nutrition Show. How are you doing?
Hi, love. This is like a surreal moment that I'm on your podcast, that the podcast is like a thing that's here. I'm good. How are you?
How about that picture?
Oh, my God. Wait, this is so crazy.
For those that are not looking at Zoom right now, and I'll make sure in whatever audiogram I use, but so I forgot why I was looking for a picture of myself, but I was looking for a picture of myself and I have a little album and this was the first picture that popped up. And first of all, is this from my birthday party, your birthday party?
Okay, wait, you're going to freak out because my dad just gave me a box of stuff and that's from my house because I had a Barbie Polaroid. And there's a photo that I found, a Barbie Polaroid of me and my cousin Tati. So I have the same Polaroid at that same party of my cousin Tati and I in my house that I just found right now.
I feel like this is, first of all, we were probably like 5 or 6. We definitely weren't older than that. I can see, I'm trying to see this like in the background, if it's like where your kitchen dips. Not the kitchen, where like the family room,
at your
dad's place. But I was looking at this, I was like, oh my God, I need to show Scout this on the podcast. So I'm super, super excited. But yeah, blast from the past, right?
Oh my gosh, that has to be the cover of the reel or whatever that you post when you promote this episode.
So this is a very special episode because number one, Scout has been a part of my life since kindergarten, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. We grew up in Hanukkah Hill in Del Cerro together. It's not really called Hanukkah Hill, but that's what we called it because all of the Jewish homes would have Hanukkiahs and menorahs. And that's how you knew that we were just a very Jewish area. But more recently, you know, as I've talked about on the podcast, I've wanted to start this podcast for the last 2 years. And Scout has had a podcast for 5 years.
Five years.
Yeah. And so I remember when she started her podcast, I was like, that's so cool. And like, I didn't start my business and I didn't know much about it. I was just like, that is like, I felt like you were so famous and like you did something so cool. And now that I am doing it, I was obviously very scared. I'm like, it's, you know, definitely, you know, just easier than what I thought it would be. Of course, mindset, we can talk about that. But I feel like Scout is now my mentor when it comes to podcasting. And it just feels so incredible because not only is she just a childhood friend who I've done so many things together, but she is just a brilliant person in business. And the incredible like triumphs that she's had, which I'm so excited for her to share. But also, she's a mom and she's a dear friend. So I'm super excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you. This is going to be interesting. I'm excited to see what you ask me. I'm like, yeah. Wow, this is, I mean, I've podcasted with friends before, but I don't think I've podcasted with like a childhood friend before. So let's see what comes out.
I'm very excited. Well, for the people who don't know Scout, because again, I'm holding my tongue every time I'm trying to call you by what I know you as. But I mean, I want to tell everyone who you are and how did you get to where you are today?
So there's a long, long, long story about how I got to where I am. But on a professional side of things, I started a podcast 5 years ago with my sister and fell in love with the medium. It's called OK Sis Podcast. We're on the Podcast Nation Network. And starting that podcast really transformed my sister and my career on a completely different level. We always joked that we were two Jewish sisters that like didn't really know what we were doing or where we were going, but we knew we wanted something big out of life and out of business. And so the podcast was really the catalyst for that. It was a catalyst for personal development for my sister and myself. It gave us the network of our dreams. We have been so privileged to interview some of the most amazing, amazing women in all different types of industries and spaces. And so the podcast was really the beginning of my career as I know it today. Once I started that podcast, I had the idea for Scout's Agency, which is the business that I run today, which is the leading agency in getting women as guests on podcasts as a form of PR. So we're a PR agency that we run podcast tours for female entrepreneurs, really harnessing this medium to get women out there and telling their stories and building their businesses, brand exposure, et cetera. So that's kind of like the bullet point. There's another side of my story, which a lot of people in the podcast space know of, which is that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at the age of 20. I had my first depressive episode at the age of 14. And so my early 20s really were, for lack of a better term, a shit show of trying to figure out where I stood in this world and where I could find my fulfillment. And I found that via podcasting and entrepreneurship. I say that it really was a parallel healing path for me. And today I stand really, really strong as a business owner and now as a mother. And, you know, feel really also very strong in my emotional landscape. So that's what I do. I podcast. I help other female entrepreneurs get on podcasts as guests. I'm a mom. And yeah.
I love it. I mean, to watch you come from where you started and falling in love with something that also healed you. So again, this is a podcast about all things, but mainly, you know, health and sustainable weight loss. And what I wanted to talk to you today, because I know that you've been through your own health journey and doesn't have to be about that physical, that mental and emotional. So I don't know if you remember, you know, obviously we're very close growing up. And, as you were going through something emotional happening in your family, whether you want to share or not, but I don't know if you remember, I took my car, you called me, you were not in a good place, you were crying, and I came and I picked you up. So we must've been like 16. And I remember sitting in the dark on a laneway or whatever street it was. And I think that was, I also remember, maybe it was outside of Salatai. I remember we were like in a parking lot. It was dark. It was at night. And you were
I think
just,
it was outside of the yogurt spot.
The Froyo. By Salatai. So you do remember. And yeah. I remember, I'm going to be honest, that was my first experience witnessing someone in a place where they felt out of control of their emotions and did not know what was going on. And so the reason why, I don't want to start crying or get the chills, but I felt that after you when I was struggling with binge eating and I was struggling. I remember crying to my dad. He knows the story. Sitting in my room on my yellow couch. And I was like, there's something wrong with me. I don't know what's going on with me. Like, there are times when I just cannot stop eating and I'm stuffing my face and it's kind of like I was in this like trance. And so, I thought of that story with you because I don't think I recognized what was going on with you. And as a 16-year-old, I was looking at you and you were in so much pain, but also to watch how you have, again, healed from this. I know that there are so many women out there who feel that way, where they just feel stuck or they don't know what they're feeling and they just turn, whether it's to food or, you know, whatever it is. But do you remember that? You obviously do, but how did you heal and how did you figure out what was going to pull you out of that darkness?
You know, it's a crazy moment because I talk about my mental health so much on podcasts, but it's usually with people who don't know my mental illness. And I forget that there's like a very select few people who do know it. And so to hear you bring that moment up is very, it's like very exposing for me because usually I talk in a good way because usually I explain things to people, right? But usually the podcast host hasn't seen it and very few people have seen it, which I think sometimes confuses people. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. I remember that night. I don't remember what it was about. I don't remember you picking me up. I just remember sitting in the car crying. How I healed. I mean, it's like a decade long story. In high school, I went up and down. I think you can probably attest and confirm that. I think our friends just kind of like knew that I was going through something and that I was in therapy and that I had a different emotional kind of spectrum than other people. But you know, this was almost 20 years ago that I had my first depressive episode. This was 18 years ago. So people talked about mental health differently. And in high school, while I went to a therapist and I took a test that said that I was, you know, borderline chronic and / clinically depressed, there wasn't really much done for me because they didn't know if I was just a teenager dealing with some things at home with my family or if this was actually a mental illness. And so nothing was done. I wasn't put on medication. I wasn't like really treated seriously in therapy, but I just went to this guy once a month. But it wasn't until I left for college that it started to become much more. I started developing a sense of psychosis and paranoia. And so I would think that men were following me home under my bed, in my closet. And I was losing touch with reality. Like I knew I had like one finger in reality where even though my body was experiencing this as something that was actually happening, there was a part of me that was like, this isn't real. This isn't real. But I got scared of what happens when I lose that sense of knowing that this isn't real. And so I remember calling my dad on my balcony of my apartment in college, crying and being like, there's something is happening to me. Like this isn't, and I'm losing control of it. And once I started telling him the stories of like, I would have people look in my car before I got in the car and still I'd call someone driving because I just thought there was someone back there. That's when my mental illness got a little bit more attention and we started treating it a little bit more aggressively. And I would go into therapy once a week and then I was introduced to psychiatry. And within a 2-year period of more doctors on hand, I was officially diagnosed at the age of 20. And when I heard the diagnosis, I blacked out. I don't even know what happened in that room. I went back to my dorm or my apartment with my college friends and I told them. And she called me manic depressive. And I looked it up on my phone and it said bipolar. And I just lost it. I just lost it. I started crying hysterically. I was like, my life's over. I'm never going to amount to anything. And I was on the next flight home. And I dropped out of college and I moved in with my dad. And that's what started this like, okay, now what? You know, back then it wasn't talked about. It wasn't as, there was no Instagram. Let's just put it that way. Like literally there was no Instagram. There wasn't like a fucking thought leader on mental health that I could go listen to a podcast on and figure out what to do, which is what someone's doing right now. So it was a lot of trial and error. I went through 2 outpatient programs. I was locked up in a 5150 at one point. But I always like to say the catalyst of my healing, and I should figure out how to condense this into a nicer, faster way to say this, but the catalyst of my healing was when I started dating my husband. A month into dating him, he was a year and a half sober at that point. And he looked at me and he said, if you're depressed, if you're depressed and hopeful, I will be in this relationship. If you're depressed and hopeless, I won't be here. And it was the first time anyone had really looked at me and said, you have a choice here. Like, you can be depressed, right? Like, that could just happen to you, whatever, like the chemical reaction, et cetera. You could wake up depressed, but you have a choice with how you react to it. And if you're going to react to it in a place of hope and in a place of active recovery, you know, he was saying, I'll do it with you. Like, I'll walk down the path with you. But if you're going to be, you know, essentially hopeless and play the victim, like, I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm not going to watch you do that. And that's when I realized that I didn't have to take anything away or change my lifestyle or start with anything grandiose. I just had to add in hope. And so with finally losing so many things, losing my college experience, like a lot of my friendships were rocky because of my mental state, I was like, I'm not going to lose this. Like, I'm not going to lose this. And so I went to the self-help aisle at Barnes & Noble. I made sure no one saw me because it was not cool to be in that aisle. And I just bought books and I was like, okay, this book says to be grateful every day. And this book says to meditate. And this book says to do this. And I started going to support groups. And, you know, today my healing looks very different. I have a much more holistic approach. I'm not on medication. I don't do traditional therapy. I work with a coach and I have a very spiritual foundation and really, really strong way of taking care of my mental health. But it was a lot of trial and error and I was really frustrated. I remember being really jealous of my husband, and that sounds weird, but he went through a recovery program. So he checked into rehab and then he went to a sober living house and then he had meetings and then he had a sponsor and he had a structure. And I was looking around the world and I was like, where's my fucking structure? Where do I check in? Tell me what to do. And I didn't have that. So it was a lot of trial and error. I was trying to live my life at the same time. And I'm just really grateful to the place that I have come to, which is knowing that I'm safe in my emotions, trusting that I'm strong enough to experiencing them, and ultimately seeing my mental illness as the biggest gift God could have ever given me. So it's been a really long road and it's honestly just been years and years of trial and error.
I love that. I think that it's even just parallel for me. It's so I didn't realize that when you met Adam, that was that catalyst, because it was the same thing with me when I met Todd. I was studying to become a dietitian and I felt like such a fraud. Like, I was like, how can I help these people when I don't even have a healthy relationship with food, when I am controlling my body? And I was still like at the lowest of lows. And when Todd, I had to share so much with him. It was the first time that I could be vulnerable, could say that this is what I'm feeling. And for someone to say, like, let me hold your hand, like, let me be there for you. So I love that Adam provided that for you. And I want to go back. There's so many things that I want to pack from that, but something that really, really, like, one of the first things that you talked about when you got your diagnosis and you looked it up and it said bipolar, that your doctor said manic depressive and you lost it. So something that, again, is parallel to my audience is that they are called, which happened to me, you're obese. You are overweight. And it just, again, it is how we are labeled. It's how we are branded. And so why did you have that reaction?
You know, it's so interesting. I was just, someone featured me in their newsletter and they asked about this too. And I have such a different relationship with the label and the identity. But, you know, I reacted that way because of the stigma of what people thought mental illness was. I didn't know what it was. Bipolar sounded like the loony bin. It sounded like, I'll never have a job. I'm going to live in the psych ward. I'm going to be like one flew over the cuckoo's nest, right? Like, that's what I thought. I didn't have any examples of people on the internet in my life. And so for me, it was like a death sentence. I was like, I'm never going to have the job. I'm never going to have the life. And I'm crazy. Like, I was like, I'm crazy. So that's what I felt, because there wasn't anyone around me to guide me or show me. And society was at a very different point with mental illness just, you know, 12 years ago was when I got diagnosed. So that's why I felt that way in that moment.
Yeah. It's hard because now I think I appreciate that you also have found spirituality and coaching to be kind of like your medium in healing. Cause it's the same thing with me. I always like, I pay my business coach and I feel like it's better than my therapy sessions. Like that's it's so, so, so holistic and powerful. And it's so crazy that some of these things that I struggled with during my eating disorder have now been picked up and plopped into my business. And so I'm finding that it's been hard for me to navigate because I know I have healed my relationship with food and my body, and I don't see myself labeled as either obese or anorexic or all of those things anymore. But I still feel like I am navigating it in a different way. And I don't know if that's something that have you felt, have you noticed?
I mean, today, for me personally, a lot of people have, you know, whether it's an eating disorder or addiction or mental, whatever it is, ADHD, right? People have, some people take issue with the label or the identity. Maybe it's because I feel healed that I don't really care if you say I have bipolar or I am bipolar. Like, it doesn't hold any emotional charge over me anymore. So in that sense, just like the identity and the labeling of it doesn't really bother me. But in the sense of my business, when I started my business, I was so emotional. I was like up and I was down and I was up and I was down. And business, whether you have a diagnosis of any sort or not, is going to bring out all of your shit, all of your shadows, all your weaknesses, all your insecurities. Like, I'm a people pleaser through and through. Like, it's a problem. And I've gotten so much better since I've become a mom. But when I started this agency, I literally couldn't fucking sleep at night if a client sent me an email that was anything other than you're the best and this is the best service I've ever had in the entire world and I love you and thank you, right? Like, if it was like, no, she just put a period, I'd be like, she hates me and like, she hates my service. And so I remember walking into my apartment and I looked at myself in the mirror by the elevator and I just started laughing. I was like, of course, God, you had me start a service-based business because I'm the biggest people pleaser in the world. So we start businesses to continuously heal ourselves, truly. And so it's just a matter of whether or not you're up for the emotional challenge. I think that's what makes successful business owners over not successful business owners. People who are in business look at their shit, heal, get over it, and take it as a personal development journey because that's what it is. So has my shit come up in business? I mean, it's not a coincidence that I like entrepreneurship, which has a lot of high highs and a lot of low lows because that's how my emotional landscape works in general. But it's made me check myself a lot because I can't just go dark and be depressed in a room for 2 weeks. I have employees, I have an office, I have clients, I have responsibilities. And so in that way, it pulls me out. But you know, you start a business and you know, it's not all P&L stuff. That's for sure.
I love that you say that because my clients will call me out. I have one client who specifically will be like, it is a holiday. It is a weekend. Why are you writing me back? And that's probably one of the first things that my coach was like, you need to switch off all of your notifications so you don't see when you have messages. Cause when I have a message, my immediate thought too is, oh my God, what did I do? How can I help them? Like, I don't want them to be upset. So it's obviously, it's so interesting because, and I don't want to put it as like only women, but like I work with a lot of moms. And what they struggle with is always putting other people first. And I talk about this all the time. So I feel like I never understood the airplane, the mask, the putting oxygen on yourself first. I never understood that until becoming a mom. And now I agree with you. I'm also through and through people pleaser and I'm definitely better than where I was. Still room for improvement. But now that you're a mom and now that you feel like that has been, again, another catalyst. Adam was the first. Now, you know, your baby, beautiful girl. What are you doing in order to fill up your cup, in order to take care of yourself, put that oxygen mask on first?
You know, before having a baby, my days were set up with the oxygen mask. So like, even though I was a people pleaser, it was mostly with my time. Like I would say yes to a bunch of shit that I didn't want to do, or I would, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's usually where my people pleasing comes in, or I really didn't want anyone to be mad at me. That was a big one. But I had always put my oxygen mask on first as far as my self-care. So I had hours a day of a mental health practice ritual. Like, I'm not kidding. I had a 2-hour morning routine, that was just dedicated to my mental health, journaling, meditation, movement, listening to the right podcast, the skincare, the supplement, the food. Like, it was beautiful. Okay. I missed that fucking morning routine with all of my life. Mm-hmm. And then I even had one at night. I had like an hour nighttime routine, and I did check-ins, and I was going for cupping and acupuncture, and I had my coach. Like, I was dialed into my mental health because I had to be. If I was at a party and it went late, I'm going home because my sleep is more important, because that's going to contribute to my mental health. So I was running my day-to-day with the oxygen mask being first, but the oxygen mask was my mental health, not my soul, maybe, right? Like, I would then let people take advantage of my time and do things I didn't want to do. And that was eating at my soul. But when it comes to a mental health standpoint, I've always put myself first because I have to. There's no option. If I don't, this ship doesn't run. So now with being a mom, obviously, you know, your time, you don't got 2 hours in the morning, you know, it's gone. I'm still grieving that. But it's important to get it in, even if it doesn't feel good, or if you don't feel like it's working, or it's not a full session. So I will say, now that my baby's one, I would say on average, every single day I've gotten to 2 out of 3 of my main goals, which are journaling, my 3 like main goals: journal, meditation, movement. So journaling, I have probably done 90% of my days since she was born, a full journaling session. Meditation, I do probably about half my days, and movement, I do half my days. So I get my stuff in no matter what. I remember when she was a newborn, she would fall asleep on me. Boom, we're doing a meditation while she's sleeping on me, right? Like, you just get it the fuck in. Like, there's just, like, you just do, right? And it's been important. And I get it in because it's important to me. So I do that a lot. I have micro moments for myself. So if she's napping, I check in, like, what is most useful? Is it to get an hour of work done? Is it to take a nap? Is it to watch Selling Sunset? Is it to do a meditation? Like, I'm always checking in with moments where I get to myself, and I'm maximizing that time. She will never take a nap, and then all of a sudden I'm like, damn it, she woke up. Where did the hour go? No. Like, it's regimented over here because it has to be, and because I deserve it. I deserve it. I deserve that time to be used towards my own nourishment. Does that mean that it's perfect? And does that mean that I'm, you know, I'm also her primary caretaker at times, a little bit overwhelmed? Yeah, of course. I'm working on asking for support for more alone time. But I really do believe that there are so many pockets of your day, no matter how busy you are, that you can do a meditation instead of just sitting in the Uber, or you can take a few deep breaths while you're driving, or you can listen to content that inspires you versus tears you down, or you can be mindful about your phone intake, or you can make sure you get to bed on time. Like, yes, granted, I know, I'm so sorry I'm going to say this, my baby's been sleeping through the night since month 4, right? But a lot of people's babies sleep and then people still don't sleep. I sleep 7.5 hours to 8 hours every single night, no matter what, right? Because I put that first. So it's just about being flexible. Maybe it's not 2 hours in the morning. Maybe it's 30 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. But I'm constantly looking for ways to check in and give myself a little bit of nourishment.
I love that. And I love that you're using nourishment in like a full sense, not just like physical food. So I think, first of all, it's, yeah.
But also, something that's happened to me since becoming a mom is that am I allowed to cuss on this podcast? Because it's happened a lot.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Okay, that's how I am. I have totally changed my relationship to food since becoming a mom.
Ooh, tell me more. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that, but yeah, tell me more.
I don't have time. I don't have time to eat food that doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah.
I was a sugar addict. Don't tell my husband that I admitted that publicly. He's been telling me that for a while.
I remember when you were a kid and you're sour, like, oh, no, the sour, the long things. I know you're sugar addict.
Yeah. It's continued into adulthood. I don't eat sugar anymore, and not from a place of restriction. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat dairy. I don't eat heavy foods that make me feel lethargic or upset or mess with my mental health, because I don't have room in my day. I don't have room in my life to not feel good. And so food at this point has become such a liberating, healing tool for me, where I ask myself, like, how do I want to feel today? And how do I promote that via food? And how do I reach for something that's going to nourish me versus deplete me or give me brain fog the next day? And that's not, and it honestly has not even ever felt restrictive. It's felt so freeing, because I now feel like I can say no to the cake or the candy, and not in a restrictive way, but because like I genuinely know it's not going to make me feel good and I don't want that today. If I want that today, I'm like, I consciously make the decision, right? I'm like, you know what? It's a weekend. Like, I'm not doing anything later tonight. I'll be okay if I don't feel that great later. But it's just this, like, I feel like I have freedom of choice, and the choices that I'm making are not determined, or they're not just based off of a craving that I can't control. I'm making decisions that are in my highest alignment, and I've never felt cleaner, less bloated, lighter, and not even in like the physical pound sense, but just in the everyday, my brain feels clearer and it feels really liberating. And it really was made out of a necessity. Like, it's like why parents don't get hungover, you know, it's why parents don't drink a lot. I was like, well, I'm not going to eat all this sugar and then eat a pizza and then feel like shit the next morning because I don't have time to feel like shit anymore. And that's been one of the biggest blessings ever.
I love that you said, well, there are so many things that I wanted to unpack, but that you brought that up is something that I always coach my clients is, again, food is a precursor to how you want to feel. So that's exactly what you're doing. Like, I love that. I love the reframe, though, is I don't have time. I don't, because a lot of my moms are like, I don't have time to do these things, but they're literally doing something that takes away their time because they feel like crap or they feel lethargic. So I think it's so important when you just flip that script in your head is like, I don't have time to feel like that. And I know that this salmon bowl or whatever, the egg avocado toast is going to make me feel better than, you know, the Pop-Tart or, you know, whatever it is. So I think the hardest thing that people have when it comes to food and nourishment is because they don't think that, again, it's a precursor. It leads to you feeling like something. They always think of it as an afterthought. They always think, I deserve this. I'm stressed. I didn't. So I think that's beautiful. I'm curious though, I get it. Motherhood kind of sparked that because of the time thing, but did you feel like you always kind of had that innately with you, or that's just been actually different since motherhood?
I think I've had it with, you know, like my sleep, right? Like I don't have time to be tired tomorrow, or I can't afford to be tired tomorrow because that is important to me to be well rested at work the next day. Or I don't have time to overextend my schedule because my priority is at work. I feel like once the baby was added into the mix, then I couldn't afford to not physically feel my best because you're also going through postpartum where you feel crazy. And your sleep schedule in the beginning is all fucked up and your body's different, right? And it, for me, my relationship to food was about how can I feel the best in my body and in my brain and in my emotional state? And how is food either going to get me there or not get me there, right? And so for me, it was all of a sudden not an emotional decision, but like the most logical decision ever. I was like, well, I barely slept last night because, you know, she was up, let's just say early on the days. My hormones are everywhere. I have to go to Vegas for a conference that I'm bringing her with me. No, I'm not going to eat this bean and cheese burrito right now because that is just going to add fuel to my fire and it's not going to work. It's going to make everything worse. And so it became like this very, and it's, I'm so happy because for every woman, food's emotional. For every woman, it's fucking emotional. But suddenly I've been able to look at it as just this thing of like, how good do I want to feel today? And then make decisions based off of that.
And you're in control. And the thing that, I mean, you are a mindful eater. Like you literally just described what mindful eating is. It's about you making those present conscious choices that's going to fuel your body and help you feel its best, help you reach its goals. So I feel like it has a lot of strength. Like you have a lot of strength to be able to say that. It's easier said than done, of course, when someone's not secure in that. But
Of course.
I couldn't
do it before. So
exactly. And so, but something that I'm still struggling with that I would love to steal from you is when you said, so the same concept that you don't have time to not get in, you know, your routine. And maybe it's not 2 hours or 3 hours total anymore, but it's something. And something that I've been practicing is I never understood journaling until I got the 5-minute journal. And now I practice gratitude and it's been dipping my toe in the waters. And it actually has helped me a lot postpartum as well, being grateful and practicing that daily gratitude. But I have found what you said, like, nope, I have an hour. I'm not going to say, what did I get done during her nap? I struggle with that because of my perfectionism that I have. I'm also grateful Olivia is an amazing sleeper. So I have 2-3 hours. But because everything has to be so I end up getting so paralyzed. And then the 3 hours are gone. I'm like, fuck, I literally did nothing. Like, how do you overcome that?
What are you trying to make perfect? The house?
No, it's like literally I will have business things to do. So again, like whether it's like, writing the show notes for this podcast or coming up with a title or
overwhelmed by what to prioritize.
Well, so that's what I'm trying to work on is like my big three, like, you know, what are the three most important things? And of course, I do the easy things first, which probably doesn't help. But I love because I feel like a lot of the ladies and me included struggle with like, OK, I have this allotted time. How do I maximize this time? And a lot of the times we feel so paralyzed because there's just so much to do. And we end up not doing it, or we get, again, like this paralysis of like, well, I'm not doing it right. And the all or nothing perfectionism kicks in.
I mean,
just do it.
I mean, I don't know if this is appropriate, but like, you're never going to fucking do it all right. It's never going to be fucking perfect. And like, this is a choice. If you want to stay in your emotion, what is your emotional paralysis? Like, how is your emotional paralysis serving you? Like, what are you afraid of doing? What's the reason you're not jumping into action? Yeah. There is something that's like a little bit deeper rooted, but also there's with stuff like this, for me personally, it's like you can unpack it right with a coach as to why you do this, but at the end of the day, you just got to do it. Like you just have to do it. You just got to jump into action. And if you don't jump into action, like that's okay too, right? Like there are some days during her nap where I do have a million things to do in my business, but I know that I need an hour. I know I need an hour to like sleep, or I need an hour to read my book for pleasure, or I need an hour to watch TV. And so it's really getting in touch with your body to know what you need in that point. And first of all, the work is always going to be there, whether you have a baby or not, right? Like the work's always going to be there, whether you have children or not, whether you have other responsibilities or not. You could have nothing going on. You could be living in a city by yourself in a studio with your business, and you will still always have more work. And so it's this ability to, one, prioritize what you need to do. Like in those moments, do I need mental health and self-care, or do I need to get shit done? Right. And then once I make that decision, then it's like, okay, well, what shit do I want to get done? And what kind of self-care do I want to implement right now? But it's something I don't have a lot of advice on this, because I think this is something my sister struggles with as well sometimes, which is this like filling the hours with productivity in a way that moves the needle, that's positive. I just don't care. Like I'll go and read a book at 2 p.m. in the middle of the day and not feel bad that I didn't work that day. You know what I'm saying? So I don't have that issue. So maybe I'm not the best person, but you know, you are perfect, even though nothing you ever do will be perfect, right? Like that's the paradox of how we need to look at things.
I guess I need to talk to Mads about that, because there's someone else out there apparently. But no, and so what you said,
But you're right. A lot of I know a lot of women suffer with that. I just don't know the best way to advise, because it's not something that I have overcome personally.
Well, so something that you did say was, again, priorities. And so I think that is hitting the nail on its head, because something that I always talk about is non-negotiables. And again, I always say, do as I say, not say as I do. Like I in that moment, you said something, reading a book at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday and not, you know, feeling guilty about not getting work. Oh my God. Like all of my social media stuff has to happen at 8 o'clock, because I don't want to be, you know, in the DM when I need to do like work, you know, 9 to 5, and that stuff I can do later when I'm like not, you know, working. So I think something that we can all take from that comment is, what is our priority? And I call it a non-negotiable. And I think putting weight on mental health, spiritual and emotional health equal to physical, because some people will, you know, probably discount that, like, again, that shouldn't be a non-negotiable or a priority, because it's not my kids, or it's not a client, or it's not that. So I think that is like the first step that someone has to be like, okay, for example, it's a Saturday and she's napping, and I'm like, okay, I have my podcast launch in 3 months. Do I have to do this show note and title right now?
Okay. This is what we're dealing with, Jax. You're just, I mean, this is like, okay, first of all, this is something that every business owner struggles with. This is what something every business, there's no 9 to 5. So no matter what time or day it is, you think you should always be working and doing something. And that's a switch that you got to turn off. You got to turn it off. Like, I don't check my emails on the weekends. I don't have email notification on my phone. I don't have Instagram notification on my phone. My phone's usually on Do Not Disturb, so I barely even have text notification. Like, I trust that I look at my email enough. You know what I'm saying? But there's also something to be said about like the stages of entrepreneurship. Like, that was me the first 2 years, 150%. Like, at night, I want to do something. Yeah. Like, entrepreneurship is just, there's no boundaries that someone's giving you. So you have to create your own. Like, I don't work on weekends unless I genuinely feel inspired to work on weekends. Also, my business is at a point now, 5 years in, where I don't necessarily, and I'm so grateful, need to be on call 24/7 for it. Like, I don't need to be. I have a team who really runs a lot of the things. And so it's a lot of my systems and processes I've built in to be automatic and to not require so much of my attention and presence at all times. Like, I can afford to take a day off and my business will still run as smoothly as it runs. And it's not a big deal at all. I can take weekends off, not a big deal. So it's a level of like, it's just one of those things that you go through that you'll learn the right balance for yourself. And once you learn that no matter how much you work, there will still be more work. It lets you take a little bit of pressure off putting in those systems, like turning off your notifications. When you said that, I was like, you have your fucking email note. What is going on over there? Like, those definitely have to come off, right? It's just about finding that balance because it can consume you and then you get hard on yourself and then you don't know if you did the right thing or if you were working enough. And then once you let that go and it's, you know, you have to go through it. There's nothing I can say that's going to like switch it in your head. It becomes so much chiller, so much chiller.
Yeah, no. And thank goodness.
Do you clear your inbox? Do you clear your inbox?
That's another thing where I have like so many unread emails. I'm like, I have to read them all. So I'm working on
that. But do you clear them every day or no?
No.
Oh, good. Beautiful. Yeah. I used to clear mine every day like a psycho.
Yeah, no, I used to like anytime I had to like that. Again, this is like within a week. Type of new. Like, I'm like, okay, I don't need to check my email every day. And like, I have finally switched notifications off because I used to get a notification every time a client. Yeah. We're working on that. But I do think something that you mentioned again is just like really making sure we know what is that priority to focus on. And we don't have to control everything. I think that's something that a lot of us struggle with is because especially with motherhood. And as we get older, like we feel that out of control. I know a lot of the ladies like relate to this so much is that like, I'm not in control and I don't like being in control. And that is the scary part. So letting go of that control and knowing what you should control and what you shouldn't control. So I feel like that is definitely something a little bit genetic. I think that's why it's been easier for you and harder for me and Mads is because genetically we are type A perfectionists and productivity. And we are, I don't know her Enneagram, but I'm an Enneagram 3. I'm an achiever. Yeah, so it's like, yeah. So, oh, you're also an achiever. So again, like it's definitely something we have to recognize where we in our healthy state versus when we go into our unhealthy state and how we can navigate that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to for me because I've always wondered this because I am very type A and I am an Enneagram 3, but I'm not, and I'm a Virgo, but I'm not like so crazy anal about some things that people would assume someone of those things would be. And I think for me, what it comes down to is, does this move the needle or not? Like, does it move the needle in your personal life? Does it move the needle for your mental health? Does it move the needle for your business? And if it doesn't, it's not serving you. And that's all you need to know.
I love that. That's going to be the episode title. Does this move the needle? Is this moving the needle? It's interesting because, you know, especially in entrepreneurship, learning about like revenue generating tasks and things like that. And so that's where I'm starting to be like, okay, like I was doing all of these, like adding a space, making sure the period, like all of these things. I'm like, this is not revenue generating. I don't need to be so type A about this. So that is definitely something that I'm working on and relating it to our listeners of like, even for you, like I always talk about what are the things that are actually going to move the needle in your health journey. So for you, your journaling, your meditation. Tell me a little bit more about, I'm very curious, because I'm dipping my toe in the water for journaling. What does that practice look like for you?
Oh, journaling is my ride or die main thing. I have a black moleskin notebook from every year of my life since I was in ninth grade. So I journaled all through high school, but it looks different than what it does now. I stopped journaling for a couple years actually during my more intensive healing periods because I felt that journaling was making me dwell in my depression. And so I just felt like it wasn't serving me. It wasn't moving the needle forward. So I let it go with ease and beautiful and grace for a little bit. And then I came back to it about probably 5-6 years ago. So it's the first thing I do in the morning. I wake up, I walk upstairs. I like to be very specific because when other people give their morning routine, I'm like, wait, how'd you get from this small A point to this small B point? I wake up, I go upstairs, I pour myself a cup of coffee, I take my seed probiotic, I go to the bathroom, I come out, I sit down, I light Palo Santo, I take my first sip of coffee, and I journal. Like, I'm journaling within 5 minutes of getting out of bed every single morning, unless, of course, like I wake up when she wakes up or she wakes up early. And I journal for about 20 to 35 minutes, free flow, subconscious, about probably 1 to 2 pages on average. And that's my journaling practice. Sometimes it starts with, good morning, I'm tired, I'm just waking up, I had a weird dream, or good morning, I'm going to the office today, or good morning, whatever, I can't think right now. And then by the end, I'm like on a roll, right? Like I'm on a roll, I'm processing, I'm excited, I'm dreaming, I'm talking shit out with myself. And at the end, I feel awake and alert and connected and like myself, and as if I have a really clear intention and vision for the day.
I love that. That is, to me, I always talk about, you know how they say like breakfast of champions, right? So I think that is the breakfast of champions, like starting out your day with something that fuels the fire. And that again, puts you in this headspace. And I've just noticed even answering the questions of, you know, what are three things that you're grateful of? What are three things that you would make today great? And like a daily affirmation, it takes me 5 minutes. And I think for someone who's more of a novice, I need that little like nudge of what to answer. But recently, since I started therapy, I've been actually using a journal. And three big questions that I'm focusing on is, you know, who's the identity that I need to become? Like who am I? Because I think I'm still working on what that looks like for me. Mm-hmm. What makes me happy, and what does success look like for me? And so you guys can totally steal those things, but it's been really, really incredible because every time when I write about who I am, it's the person that is not a type A perfectionist, right? It's a creative, and it's someone who wakes up and is, and then again, what makes me happy always has to do with Olivia, always has to do with my family, being outside, listening to a podcast, and then success never has to do with the numbers. So it's been really helpful for me because the things where I got stuck are actually not the things that are truly, truly important to me. So when people are struggling with weight or health and things like that, they're focused on those external factors and they don't get connected to the internal. So I feel like your journaling practice does that for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it just kind of untangles the subconscious as you're going in between that like waking state, you know, dreaming state to waking state. And then in my ideal world, I hop right into a meditation right after that in my ideal world. And that's always helped me because sometimes people find it hard to meditate. It's too hard to sit still. But I find that if you do an energy dump before you meditate, whether it's journaling or whether it's moving your body real quick just to release some energy, you slip into meditation much easier.
I love, so meditation, are you just, is it like yourself? Are you listening to something? What does that look like?
I do guided. So I switch between teachers. I was on a Dr. Joe Dispenza kick for a while, but it's not serving me anymore. So I stopped doing him. Right now I'm doing Melissa Wood's meditations.
Is that Melissa Wood Health? Oh, I love it. I used to follow her when she first started her business, the Pilates, right?
Yeah, she's amazing. She's the only movement. I walk. I do like a 45-minute walk in my neighborhood and it's like all uphill. So it's challenging. But then if I do any other sort of movement, it's always a Melissa Wood Pilates session.
I love, guys, keep it simple in your home, in the comfort of your home. You're not working up a sweat. So this has been incredible. I do want to ask you one last question, and I'm very curious to hear your answer. What is one time when a door has been closed on you or by someone else that has opened up another door?
Wow.
I was going to
tell me.
I know. And now you're like, again, we don't edit anything on this podcast. So take as much time as you need.
Wow. Okay. I mean, there's been a lot of doors. There's one recently that it comes to mind, but I prefer to not share. So I'll share a couple other ones.
That's okay.
You know, I think that every like move in my 20s, my early 20s, was a door closing on me. Like, I dropped out of college. I started 6 businesses that didn't work that I had to shut down. I never made any money off of them. Like, it was just a series of door closing, like just a series of door closing where like there was no momentum moving forward. I would try something and it didn't work. I would try something and it didn't work. And then it led me, that pursuit led me to podcasting. So I'm a firm believer that anytime a door closes, it's because a better one's about to open. It's just a matter of, my sister and I always say hindsight is 20/20. We just don't know why this is happening yet. But once we figure it out, it's going to be so crystal clear. We're going to be so grateful that we're going through what we're going through. We always remind ourselves that. So I think that any hardship is a door closing because another door is about to opening. That's how I lead my whole life, right? It's a sense of trust and surrender. I mean, I tried to get pregnant with Lily for a year and a half, every month, actually trying. Every month I got my period, a door closing. Every month I got my period, a door closing. And I wondered why. The minute I moved into my new house, first time, boom, I got pregnant. And it's because I was waiting to be settled, right? And it's like I got the baby girl of my dreams. So that's, in my opinion, like a pure, like that is actually the way in my, it's the philosophy in which I live my life, like trusting the closing doors, like trusting and surrendering when a door closes, because you're about to have a door open. And that might take months, that might take a year, it might take 2 days, it might take weeks. But that trust and surrender spot right in the middle makes the door opening really juicy and great. So that's a trust muscle that I've built my whole life. And I feel as if every time a door does close on me, I get really excited to meet the woman who's about to walk through another awesome door. So
I love that. And what you practice grows stronger. And the fact that you've practiced that for your entire life, and here you are giving us inspiration, because I will say, when a door, and it really hits home when you talk about, you know, the pregnancy and, you know, fertility and all of that. And again, it's the way that you looked at it and look at your life, look at where you are. I'm so honored. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, I'm so honored and proud of you. You sound like you've been podcasting for like 10 years by now.
Oh yeah. Well, only a few episodes in, but I am so grateful. So tell everyone where they can find you, how they can listen to your podcast and all things Scout.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Scout Sobol. You can listen to my podcast, OK Sis Podcast. That's OKAY space SIS. And if you want to be a guest on podcasts and go on a podcast tour, you can go to scoutsagency.com and submit our intake form there. And that's about it.
Yeah, and she has the best team. And I know the people that have worked with her are literally just over the moon with her service. So I'm so grateful to have you on. And until next time.
Thank you.
Powerful, jam-packed episode. I mean, I hope you guys have the chills and learned so much from that. I mean, Scout, first of all, to come from a place from the first episode, depressive episode, when she was 14, and I was there. I remember it, sitting in that car with her, to see where she is today as a 32-year-old and a thriving business, a podcaster, a mother, but just really owning her mental health, her physical health, her emotional health, and the things that she doesn't have time for, she just lets it be, right? She doesn't even let it affect her. So if you guys are an Enneagram, like, well, we're threes, so an achiever, I'm pretty sure it's called an achiever. I'm very curious if you guys, what Enneagram you are, so make sure you tell me. But what I want you to take away from this episode is, what moves the needle? And so I want to ask you, and send me a message on Instagram. I want you to tell me, out of all the things that you are doing, what is the one thing that moves the needle? And is it actually moving the needle for you? Because that is what happens when it comes to our health journey, that we focus on doing all of the things. And I've talked about this so much on the podcast. Like, it's not about doing more. It's about being more. So becoming that person that focuses on the things that move the needle. So there were so many many incredible little tidbits from here, but pieces of information that Scout shared that I really hope hit home for you, because not only is she just so eloquent, and you can obviously tell she's a writer, she has an incredible book, but really when it comes to taking care of yourself, it's really, again, how am I living with that oxygen mask on? And that is your mental health, and your mental health comes first, because the rest, the spiritual, the emotional, physical health all tie into that. So we really have to remember your mindset. That's why I always say mindset when it comes to weight loss, it's 90% between the ears. So I want you to send me a message on Instagram at the.mindful.nutritionist and tell me, what is your needle mover? And if you don't know, that's okay. Let me help you figure it out. So if you are like, I am ready to actually finally take charge and focus on those needle movers, don't forget to apply to Mindful Weight Loss Academy. This is why it's called Mindful Weight Loss Academy, because these are the things that we do. And as you heard how Scout healed her relationship with food, these are the things that we have to do, but it's not about flipping on and off a switch. It really is that trial and error and deeply connecting with yourself and understanding what foods work best for you that make you feel good, like she was talking about. So I am so excited that you're here, and I hope you enjoy this episode. I cannot wait to hear and help you figure out those needle movers, or if you're ready to jump in on Mindful Weight Loss Academy, I am so excited to review your application and help you transform your physical body, your mental, emotional, all of it together. So I'm sending you all of my love, and until next week, I'll see you then. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation just as much as I did. As always, anything mentioned, any links, any notes will all be linked on our website, mindfulnutritionistshow.com. Just head on over there to take a look. And if you haven't connected with me yet personally, I would love to meet you. Come and find me on Instagram at the.mindful.nutritionist, and please DM me. Let me know if you listened to the episode and what you thought. I seriously love hearing from you. Or come to the Mindful Nutritionist Show Facebook page and say hi. I would love to connect with you there. Thanks so much for being here and for being so amazing. I can't wait to chat next time.